Hi, everybody, and welcome back to this episode of Slay, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. We are delighted that we have a guest this week, a mystery guest that we hinted at last week, and then one of my colleagues actually messaged me to be like, hey, that was not nice when you didn't say what the surprise was. And I said, too bad, so sad. Anyway, welcome back to the podcast. We're so excited that you're here. We are continuing on our book study of Proficiency-Based Instruction, Teaching Grammar for Proficiency by Ritz and Travers. We are wrapping up as we are recording this chapter 5 of the book study, and we'll be moving into chapter 6 the week of October 27th. We are glad to have you join in late, to come way after the fact. Go back to chapter 1, do whatever you want. We're on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram. Threads? Question mark, Bill?
Yeah, we're there.
We are present on Threads. And so, and at your own pace, please join in the conversation. It's been really, really great, and I'm so excited for the participation. So join us there for that. And if you would like to support the podcast, this helps us host the podcast on the internet. We would appreciate any support that helps keep the podcast a running. But enough of my yapping about
Speaking of, a real quick shout out to
Catherine Sederberg.
Catherine, yeah, thank you so much, Catherine.
Hi, Diva.
And some other people as well that have supported. I think there was Becca and Liz. So, Catherine, Becca, Liz, thank you very, very, very much. We appreciate you. Slay.
Enough yapping about the logistical side of thing. Bill, yeah. who is our guest? Who could it be?
Well, so for our Spanish teachers, you might know that there's a little bit of a teacher event going on right now that's taken the internet by storm and full of losing time and also having everything under control. What? Oh. Oh, this is new to you, Ben?
The German teacher in me is so intrigued.
We have with us today the diabolical mastermind, the genius that is Senor Woolley. Woo! Fair.
Yay! Wee.
Thank you.
Welcome also to the known podcast. as Jim Woolridge.
It's the first time. I think it's the first time I have been ever introduced as diabolical, and I've been waiting for that moment because it's kind of like my thing. And you finally completed that for me, so thank you very much, Bill.
Oh, no problem. The first thing that comes to mind whenever I think of you is diabolical, so I'm glad that you're in agreement.
I very much am. I mean, anyone who knows known me for a long time or has been watching my stuff for a long time knows that I have a little bit of a diabolical streak in me. A little bit of desire to cause a little bit of a ruckus from time to time. I've been doing it for years, and I at some point think I'm going to mature, but I'm 49 years old and it doesn't show any signs of
waning.
No
reason.
So, no, I mean, I think this might just be who I am. It's cemented my identity and I'm happy to embrace it. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Can I share like a quick, my first memory of you?
I thought that's what this entire podcast was going to be. I'm just ready to be an audience.
Yeah. Not to age you, but
it's all right. My kids age me.
I remember being taught Billy La Bufanda as a high school Spanish student.
Yeah, and how do you leave this meeting? There's like a button, right? Because that's that's where I draw the line.
Yeah,
yeah.
In your defense, it was also the very start of your Woolley journey. Like, I think I remember the web page being a very, very simple page with just Billy La Bufanda on it.
Yeah. You might be referring to jameswoolridge.com, my very first website.
Right? It might have been.
There was a little picture of me in the corner, and if you hovered your mouse over it, my front tooth went missing. A lot of people didn't know that, but for the people who were on the In Club. Yeah.
So you've always been wild.
Yeah, Billy La Bufanda. I a lot of people say I peaked with Billy, and I can't say I disagree entirely, but
For the German teachers, the French teachers, the Chinese teachers that listen to us, Jim, just give us like a rundown of like what has been your trajectory? Like, how did you get into what you're doing now? And what is that even?
So I was a middle school teacher for about 10 years, taught high school as well for a couple of years, but middle school was kind of like my identity. I don't really know how I ended up teaching middle school at this point because I hated Spanish all throughout middle school and high school. It was my least favorite subject of the year, legit. And I never thought I'd find myself there. But, you know, I was an actor in Chicago working professionally, and I use professionally with air quotes. You know, I don't mean to diminish what I did, but, you know, I certainly didn't pay the bills. So my mom was looking out for me, no joke. And she said, hey, there's a job interview that I more or less arranged for you. Not exactly, but it's not entirely untrue either. Because she was close friends with somebody, and I walked into the principal's office, totally not intending to take this job. And the principal didn't know that I barely even spoke Spanish at this point, despite the fact that I'd studied it some in college. The only reason I got that job is because I looked around the room and saw the principal had a ton of White Sox paraphernalia all across the wall. And so I just asked him questions about the White Sox the entire interview. And he just talked about the White Sox the entire time. And at the end of it, he offered me the job. Not realizing that I was going to inflame the entire department, just in anger everyone, because of course they didn't even talk to me. I don't mean to be throwing anyone under the bus here, but yeah, they had every right to be angry. So here I was, I got this job teaching Spanish, a language that I barely spoke anymore. And I remember thinking, I mean, I'm going pretty far back here, but man, one of my worst memories was in that very first day I walk into class and they decided to give me a heritage class that had never existed before up until that point. They'd never even had a heritage class. They had their first one. They decided to give it to me. And I mean, it was about as much of a disaster as you could imagine it was. But the thing is that I also have this like performer element in me. I've been performing since I've been young, and I realized I am not performing well. So I quickly like worked on beefing up my language, and I was able to perform to a certain degree. It's just that I found myself, I don't know, I got my language perk got better pretty darn quickly because I pushed myself and I started reading a lot, and I started because I just don't like to be bad at anything, you know. I'm not saying that the people who had me as a teacher in their first 2 years aren't, their language is probably permanently messed up as a result. No, I'm kidding. but I mean, I was not great, but I quickly pushed myself to improve my language. And I started to just, I guess I started to realize at that point, maybe I can be a little bit better at this. And I started looking at how I was teaching and going, I'm teaching language the exact same way that language was taught to me, you know, the exact same way. Start with some introduction vocabulary, move on to me gusta, followed plus infinitive verbs, and then let's move on to the tough stuff, conjugation of AR and ER verbs, but we're going to hold off on those IR verbs because those are tricky. And I started to feel the same. Now, this is a couple years in, but I started to feel that same sense of boredom that I had been feeling as a student. And I was teaching the class and I was feeling the same sense of boredom and fatigue. And I was like, I got to do something different. And so I started to incorporate music into my classroom, which is something that I've been doing since I was a kid. And I started to incorporate like some simple video editing and stuff like that, because I was that geek in high school that made stupid movies all the time. Back when editing was a little bit trickier, made a horror film in high school back called The Knife That Kills. Oh yeah, that was a classic. You'll never watch it. You'll never see it. There are very few people that have seen The Knife That Kills, but it is, it taught me a lot of things. So I started making these movies for my kids, and I had no intention of finding an audience other than my own students. But this is just Bill, you aged me, but I'm going to age myself even further here. This is like pre-YouTube, or when I realized when my students came up to me and said, hey, I'd like to watch this at Stuff at Home. Can you show us how? Mm-hmm. And so I decided that the way to do it was to make a website completely from scratch and host videos on the website. So I started doing that. And then all of a sudden, weirdly, strangely, I never promoted myself. All these Spanish teachers started finding me and finding my stuff. And I suddenly found I had an audience. And that's kind of exciting. As for somebody who's been a performer his entire life, to go, oh, I've got an audience here. So I started making more stuff. And in 2009, I launched a company called Senior Wooly, which has really grown to exploded. We're used by you know, millions and millions of students around the world, you know, thousands and thousands of Spanish teachers around the world who use it now. And the core of it is basically we just tell really, really, I think, really engaging and high interest, high, really valuable stories that are kind of unique and different than I think most other educational content out there. So what we do is we tell really great stories that is told through music videos and graphic novels, and we just use the simplest language we can find to get there.
Yeah, and for the record, it's not just your opinion. They are great.
Thank you.
You know, the past couple, how many years have you done a Woolly Week? Is this the seventh one?
Woolly Week, this was our eighth Woolly Week.
Eighth, okay.
Yes, Woolly Week, the annual celebration where we celebrate Jim Wooldridge. That's what it's about.
Yes.
But we all dance record, around our Jim Wooldridges at home. Yeah.
And for those out of the know, there's usually a launch party, a live launch party for a new music video.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That's been a...
Yeah, I guess that's sort of been the... I mean, we've been doing the Woolly Week for a long time now, 8 years of it. And I don't want to turn this into an advertisement. There's like 2 weeks left of it. There's still time to join if you're still interested. But it's not. But it's really shifted over the years. But I think when we first started Woolly Week, we said, hey, it's really hard to get people's attention on the internet. So let's just launch a ton of new content all at once. Kind of follow the Weird Al Yankovic model that he would just completely vanish for like 3 years and then he would reappear and he would launch like 3, 4, or 5 new music videos in a single week. And so that was sort of the inspiration for that, just because Weird Al is just an inspiration just in general in all aspects of life. And so that was the inspiration. But then as it has morphed, like I've like realized that like what's really, I mean, the content is great, but really what this is a fantastic opportunity to get all the Spanish teachers who are using Woolly to all basically do the same thing at the same time. And what it has turned into is this amazing piece of essentially professional development. I hesitate to call it professional development because it's not exactly that. You're just doing really engaging lesson plans. But to have all like thousands of teachers doing these lesson plans at the exact same time, and everybody's talking and sharing their ideas and their modifications on how they made it work. We have classes in, you know, small rural schools, urban schools. We've got one teacher who is sharing today how they have a single student and making it work for that single student. So just seeing how so many different types of teachers from all walks of life are adapting and using them and sharing their feedback is just, I think it's incredible.
Yeah. What I was bringing up with the live streams is I even make my husband sit through them. Every single year.
Well, what's your husband's name?
Alex.
I met Alex at karaoke one night. So
yeah.
Say hi to Alex for me. It's been a while.
Will do for sure. But he even gets excited when I'm like, oh, there's a new Woolly video.
Well, thank you.
He's like, all right, let's watch it.
Well, like a different landscape for like learning materials versus I'm just like thinking back to my German learning experience and like how like whack the textbook was all the time. I was always like, what is happening in here? Like, why are we talking about that? Like my textbook, I maybe mentioned this in a previous episode, had like a series of vocab about going to a bazaar, like an open air market that had like camels and snake charmers in it. I was like, so Germany is in continental Europe. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that. And so I think they were trying to like make it interesting and they had little characters and it was still just like, I was like, what? Why is it? I don't care about these people. I don't care about this. There's nothing I care about this. So let's gaslight or let's talk un-gaslight ourselves is what has gone horrifically wrong in trying to make content for students. Maybe
well, that's the perfect question. That's the perfect framing of the question for Jim.
Well, this is a story I've told before, but I think it's an important one because I think that there's this like temptation to everybody wants to make content that will be liked by students. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a publisher or whether it's an individual teacher, everybody wants to make stuff that's liked. But where do you start, right? I mean, what is the core guiding principle of like, what is this content that you're putting out there? And I think that the vast majority of content that's out there starts with a singular focus. What is it that we want to teach? That's where a look across almost all curriculum, across all different subject matters, that is the driving principle. What is it that we have to teach? Great. We've identified it. We've broke it into little chunks. And how do we make this now appealing to students so they want to watch? And I argue that fundamental principle is flawed, at least when it comes to language education. Because I think that when you start with a thing saying, I want to teach the preterite tense. So let's then, and so then you start it, and that becomes your driving principle. So you go, okay, what are the forms that I want to teach? And how do we put some sugar coating on this now to make it appealing to students? I think students smell that from a mile away. And because the moment it smells like, the reason that this is being shown to me in this moment is so that I can learn this thing right here, it fundamentally is framed as an educational piece of content. And I'm not saying that students are dumb, but students don't want to have their time wasted, and students don't always want to just learn the thing. Students want to be engaged in the story, and for so long, educational content, and in most of their classes, educational content is educational. That is how they see it. That's how they perceive it. I like telling stories that have no educational value whatsoever. Don't frame that. No, you can use that. We don't start anymore that way. We don't start with, you know, what's a really, really important lesson that students need to learn. We just say, what is a great story? What is this incredible story that needs to be told? And we start there, and we don't ever even talk about the language and how we're going to tell it. And only once we have that incredible story, the story the story that we launched recently, and don't get me wrong, Ben, I know I haven't answered your question about where it went wrong, but I want to start with like this story that we just released. We released a story called Tarde, which means late. It's about this kid named Santiago, who's very buttoned up. He's like, he follows all the rules. He's never been late. He's never missed a homework assignment. He is the definition of organized and prepared. And he's not. He's like a really, really well-liked kid. He's got tons of friends. He just has total confidence because he just has his life together. He walks into school. He walks into class. And for the very first time in his life, his teacher says something that's never been said to him in his life. Teacher says, "You're late." And Santiago is like, "Wait, what? I'm not late. I'm on time." He looks at his watch. He's like, I arrived a minute early. Teacher says, "No, you arrived a minute late." And Santiago, he's not going to push back. He's not like a mean kid or anything like this. He's just kind of like, oh, okay. And he sits down, but he's confused. He's a little baffled by this, because this has never happened before. So he's in the hallway and he's going to his second period. So he does the only thing he can think. He thinks his watch is wrong. So he walks up to a teacher and he says, "Hey, can you tell me what time it is?" And the teacher confirms that there's 2 minutes before his science class starts. He walks into class a second later. Teacher says, "You're late." He's like, "What? What? I was 2 minutes early." Teacher says, "You're 15 minutes late." And now his life is unraveling before his very eyes. His life is unraveling. What is going on? Now he's in between the passing period and his second and third period. He runs up to a teacher in a total panic, says, "What time is it? What time is it?" The teacher says, on the dot, "What time is it?" The teacher tells him what time it is. He still has 3 minutes to get to his next class. He runs into the class. He's 40 minutes late. He's so late to class that kids are actually getting up and leaving the class because the class period is over. His life is falling apart. Time is losing all meaning for this kid. Now, I'm not going to tell you where the story ends and where it goes from there, but that was the story. That was the story. And that's how I said this to you is how we came up with this story. And only after we came up with this story, this just really, really compelling mystery, and we realized, ooh, you know what this should be? This should be like a Twilight Zone thing with like a narrator at the beginning who like talks about Santiago and talks about how, and I'm not going to spoil all the things, but only then did we say, okay, great. We have this amazing story with this awesome ending that I think will really work. Language-wise, how do we tell this story? And that's when we started talking language. And that's when we realized that, oh my gosh, this is a fantastic story to talk, to use some basic language like ¿qué hora es? What time is it? And a fantastic opportunity to use opportunities like temprano, early, tarde, late, a tiempo, on time. And that's when we started digging in, and we realized, and then we started looking at the verb llegar, which means to arrive, and looked at the preterite forms and comparing llegué versus llegaste. When you look at this song, you might even be fooled in thinking, oh, okay, well, this is clearly they wanted to teach the yo versus the to form of AR preterite verbs, or clearly they wanted to talk about time, and that was never even a thought. But I say all this, and I thank you for your patience as I tell you this story, but I say all this to say that, like, why is it that students are obsessed with Woolly? Because I think that there's no faking a storyteller's intention. If a storyteller wants to teach preterite AR verbs, they'll wear that on their sleeves. But if they want to tell a story about this kid who is inexplicably late, even though we got to see him walk into class on time, and that's the intention, the fact that it happens to just feature some of the most compelling and simple and repetitive language they've heard, the students don't care about that. They'll learn it because they care so much about Santiago in this story. But that's the driving principle. But I'll tell you, I didn't figure that out on day one.
Sometimes, I don't know if you know this, since you've been out of the classroom for a little bit, Jim, but
yes.
Ben, sometimes students are late to class.
It
like actually late, not just like thinking that they're on. And oh my gosh, the amount of joy that I have been able to have with those students coming late, telling them, why did you get here late? And they, without missing a beat, say, llegué a tiempo, I got here on time. Yeah. I mean, just like, it was just so cool. Like,
well, it's and playful, then, like, right? Like, it's a playful students, reference to entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all, like, then all the students start doing the tarde chant that's kind of in the song. So that was great to see. And then also from a personal note, one of the lines is, or one of the phrases in the song that comes up a lot is having everything under control. And like being in a hurry.
Yep.
And I just have to say, this video came out at the exact right time for me, because like getting caught in traffic, worrying about, even though I left on time and I know I was going to get to work on time, like, you know, you get a little, maybe not the general you, maybe it's just me, get really like anxious about being late to things. Yeah. And so I just took a breath and I sang the song to myself. And honestly, Jim, like, it helped me put some things in my life in perspective. So it's not just, and I think that goes to the power of storytelling, and like, we're not focusing on just getting you to use X, Y, and Z verbs and ABC tenses. You're telling a story this one for me has been like the most relatable to me, but like when you get that kind of story going, that's where you're teaching life lessons. And in this, like, I feel like especially right now for students where everything is like go, 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 it's okay to remember to slow down because we have todo bajo control.
100%. Thank you for sharing that. I think that gets to the heart too of kind of why, I don't know, I just got, and this really gets back to me and my floundering in my first couple of years of teaching Spanish and me genuinely disliking language education in middle school and high school. I just got sick and tired of language being a constant rehearsal for everything. you know, a constant rehearsal for the inevitable day where hopefully down the road you'll be fortunate enough to get to travel to a Spanish-speaking country or, you know, some other country around the world and be fortunate enough to get to do that, even though we all know that the vast majority of our students will never, ever get to have that privilege. As much as we can encourage it, the cultural and the financial barriers for most students are too high. And so we ask this, I think that too many language teachers, I lump myself into that group because I certainly did this. We just would treat language education as constant preparation for the day when it's the real deal down the road, right? Eventually, you're going to get to have a real conversation with somebody who really speaks this language, and then it will be real. And I think that's part of the reason why I like to tell stories in the classroom like this, because I like to give stories that use, I mean, we don't fake this. We don't pretend that our stories are happening in Mexico or Peru or anything like that. We frame these as like classrooms in the United States where students are speaking Spanish. We like to mix our videos with students who are, some of them are native speakers and some of them are not native speakers, and they all speak Spanish because I like to hear, because I like to hear Spanish, imperfect Spanish coming from, and perfect and imperfect, whatever that means, coming from everybody. But I like to present real language in context that can actually be used in the classroom in real context and real settings. Things like, ¿por qué llegaste tarde? Why did you arrive late? I mean, or probably my the most famous Wooly video of all time is, Maestro, ¿puedo ir al baño? Why, teacher, yeah, may I go to the bathroom?
That is one that you can see on YouTube, I believe. Yes. Right, yes, so that. Even if you're not a Spanish teacher, that is one. So you can get a little bit of an idea of what we're subjecting our students to in Spanish class.
I just like students to really feel that when they're using the language in the classroom, that it can be actually used to communicate real ideas and not just rehearsal for the day when eventually they'll get to use it. I think if we do the latter, if we just rehearse, most students never, they just leave the classroom. And those are the students who, you know, they come back, like they're in their 20s and we ask, what language did you study in high school? And they say the same thing. Well, I studied German, but I don't remember a thing. And how often do we hear that? Almost every person that we talk to says something along those lines. And I think some of it just comes down to just like, were you rehearsing or were you genuinely communicating in the classroom?
I've been so thoughtful ever since you started telling the plot of Tarde, like just about like, there are so many good, real conversations to have with kids who are concerned about these things, about the formation of their identity. Do I identify as a late person or an on-time person? I identify as an on-time person being German. My husband would question that self-identification. It's fine. He's not here. But then later also, like, how does that play into your image of yourself as a student? And I like was and am like a big nerd student, right? And wouldn't dream of doing anything to break the authority of the school or anything like that. So again, I would absolutely be that student in that situation, flipping my lid. So there are a lot of like, again, in addition to using language that is useful and thoughtful and contextualized to real conversations in the classroom, it's things that students are really grappling with their own identity and with their story and their perception of themselves and how they think others perceive them as well. I think that there has been a solid push to get more texts in the hands of students, understanding that storytelling is powerful as a means of language acquisition, as a means of providing input to our students. And then we, not to use this metaphor, but we lose the plot in the middle, like you said, of like, what are we actually doing with it? And so if we veer towards the, I am teaching something side, then that's when we kind of fall into that pit, as it were, of just not interesting, something smelling like a school material versus something that is a story that begets the engagement, the deep engagement, the kind of flow-like engagement that really leads to deeper language acquisition that is then useful in the future.
But that's honestly one of my core pieces of advice for teachers is among teachers who really, really embrace stories. There is still, I think, this like slight pull towards, well, as long as I'm doing this story, we might as well choose a story that's going to be relevant to said topic, whether that's a thematic topic or grammatical topic, whatever, what have you. I see this all the time at Woolly. I see teachers going, well, I mean, I see what you're doing, and you know, you embrace the story first, but I also see that you have this video called, oh, what's a good example? El Banco. It's a police investigation one. And so I might as well use this while I'm teaching preterite AR verbs, because it's perfect for that. I mean, you've got lyrics like, no robé el banco, robaste el banco, porque ustedes robaron el banco. Those are very conjugated forms of that. So I see it all the time where teachers go, well, I might as well merge these two things. It's a great story. It's just that I think that even when you do that, even when the story was created for genuinely just to be a story and not as an educational piece of content, how you frame, how the teachers frame it really matters. If the teachers come in and say, here's the unit that we have been studying, and now here's a story to serve that unit, I think then students ought to fundamentally perceive it as a piece of quote-unquote educational content first and not a story first. And I just think, like, stories are personal, you know? I mean, that's part of it. We're all very, very attached to the stories that we love, whether that's our music, our TV shows, or movies, or what have you. Everyone loves to have opinions about these things, but schools don't provide that choice. I mean, think about, like, it's hard sometimes. I know you guys are in the classroom, teachers are in the classroom. We see it every day, but we don't always put ourselves in the perspective of what it genuinely feels like to be a student, where you've just been in math class, and then you were in science class, and then you were in gym class, and you still smell, and now you've moved to your German class, and your German teacher has put on this video, this stupid video that I don't want to watch, and I have no choice, and I have to watch it because the teacher's standing right next to the screen trying to make eyes with anybody who's not watching it. And, like, I have no choice in this matter, so now I'm expected to, like, have some kind of connection with this video? I'm supposed to have some kind of connection with this story? I have no choice in the matter of watching this. And so those are it's not always that dire. This is the situation where this is happening, and we, as teachers, seem to ask so much of students. We as teachers get offended sometimes. I know I certainly did, would get offended if they don't like the thing. Because this piece of music I like, and now they don't like it, and they're telling me that they don't like it. And so that's a slap in my face. They're telling me that I have terrible taste. Or what? Maybe I do. Maybe I do have terrible taste, but it's not that. They just didn't have any choice. So how do we get away from that? I mean, to a certain degree, there's not much we can do. There are tactics. I have many tactics. I'd be happy to share if somebody wants some teacher tips on how to get students to like the content you share in the classroom. But if you want that cultural connection, that class-wide connection with a piece of content, I mean, at its core, I mean, we have to move away from just always making sure it's directly connected, because there's, as language teachers especially, there's always ways to tie the language in and morph the language towards what we want it to be and build the language around it, as long as you're willing to let go of certain things. Yes, that video might have the verb robar, to steal, perfectly conjugated into three or four or five different forms. That doesn't mean we ever have to comment on it. Well, can we comment on it? We can talk about this very engaging story of this interrogation. Talk about whether the tactics that this police officer is using are appropriate in this particular scenario. Talk about whether you believe this woman actually was in the movie theater at that time. Engage it as a story later. And the really brilliant thing is that if you're willing to do that, if you're willing to just kind of let go of those perfect alignments with traditional content, it really opens you up in your world to just say, I don't have to stress quite so much about which story I choose. I can just let go and just choose a really good story and find a way, because I am a professional who's very good at the language that I am speaking and teaching to my students, find a way to align that to my students. That's what we like to do at Woolly anyway. And that's what we try to teach.
What I think our listeners might be curious about is that, like, obviously, like, Wooly has a kind of, like, production team behind it that, you know, like, we're talking about making content. We may be thinking specifically of the Wooly content of a graphic novel or a, well, highly produced music video with multiple actors and things like that. What are some tips? Because I'm already kind of inspired. I'm taking notes to myself of, like, a story came to mind. Like, I was, like, really hitting this vocabulary in kind of a lame story in my class today. And I was like, I just came up with a much more compelling story that uses the same vocabulary kind of incidentally. And again, I'm copping fully to doing the thing you said not to do, which is, like, have the vocabulary in mind first. But I think I now actually have an issue as part of the story that I'm like, oh, maybe if I developed that aspect of it, it would be more interesting than whatever we've been doing before. And so, you know, maybe that's not the approach. Again, I'm trying to, like, teach something, but the idea of, like, that there's a story and that kids have experiences in our schools. What does the life of a kid look like? Then the question to, like, un-gatekeep your knowledge about this is, like, if you don't have the team around you, or if you don't have the means to make video content, for instance, or maybe you don't feel that you have, like, the quote creative personality or whatever it is, but you still want content that is engaging, that is motivating to your students, how can we create, find, curate those sorts of things?
I do get questions like that. I get teachers who say, how do I make what you make? And I mean, the answer, and I think a lot of times people are specifically asking, like, how do you make, like, videos? How do you make things like that? And the answer to that is, well, you just got to do it. You just got to do it. And just as I did, and I mean, look at the difference of Puedo Ir al Baño versus my recent videos, the skill that you take over time. But that's not the question you're asking. I think at the core, I mean, let's start with just creation of content. And we can double back if we have time to things like curating and, as you say, but creating content. I mean, I'm a huge believer in CI, acquisition-driven instruction, and all of that. But I see the same issues in those classrooms as I do in people who follow more traditional textbook models, which is that the language is the reason you're doing the thing and not the story. I mean, what's probably the most common, quote unquote, typical CI? If we're going back, let's go back. Let's, because I think everyone's familiar with it. Let's go back to, like, your typical TPRS style story. You know, like, there is a boy. What does the boy want? Right? How do the vast majority of those stories go? And I say this because I think that what I'm about to model for you guys is endemic in so much of the conversations that we see in their classrooms. How does that story typically go? Well, the story typically starts by saying, hey, you ask your class, well, what is there? Is there an elephant? Is there a pig? Is there a dancer? Right? And so we start with that. There's an elephant. It's like, and then you say, okay, great. Where does the elephant live? And we get student input. It's like, the elephant lives in San Diego. Exactly. The elephant lives in San Diego. What color hair does the elephant have? Great. So you do that. It's like, what's the elephant's name? Great. And you do that. It's like, great. And what is the elephant like? And then eventually you get to the core driving principle of the story, which is, what does the elephant want? What does the elephant want? And then you answer that question. The elephant wants Cheetos. And does the elephant have Cheetos? No. So then you do, if we're following the typical model, they go here, they go there, they don't have it, they go to the second place, they don't have it, the story ends, whatever it is. But let's just think about what just happened in that story. We just spent 15 minutes without even getting to the core conflict of the story itself. We just spent 15 minutes describing what is there. We just spent 15 minutes deciding on this character's name. We just spent 15 minutes deciding the elephant's hair color and where they live. This is, I think most teachers get maybe a solid 1 to 2 months at most where the novelty of just learning the language is enough. After that point, the novelty of learning another language is gone, except for our most high-achieving students. And unless there's some driving reason for this story, they are fundamentally bored. I mean, so I'm not saying that every story has to be perfectly thought out at all. I think that's impossible. But I think every story needs to have a reason for existing right away. And actually, that was the driving, that it was that thought that
that created a piece of content I made like 3 years ago now. It's called El Antídoto del Dragón. It's the antidote of the dragon, which is this big rock opera fantasy we did. It's the most impractical thing we've ever made. It's like a 15-minute long music video because we really wanted to make a piece of content that could never be used super, in any super classroom fun, ever. It's fun. But the opening line of that song came from a thought, which was, why are we dragging this out? Why can't we just get to it? So the opening line of the song is, había una vez una princesa que bebió un vaso de veneno, which means once upon a time, there was a princess that drank a glass of poison. And that's all I knew when I started that, is that first line. I had like kind of a, we had kind of a rhythm. Había una vez una princesa que bebió un vaso de veneno. And that was all we knew. And then we figured out the story from there. But just having like right out the gate, just starting with like, and so maybe that is like one piece of advice right there. Just start with your problem. Just start with your problem, whatever that problem is. Just get it out the day. And you can always circle back. You can always circle back and go, oh, now that we know that this princess is dying from having drunk poison, now we can find out this person's name. Now maybe if we have enough buy-in, maybe there's time to find out the hair color. But I just think that like when we do this stuff in class, we have to remember the driving principle of storytelling, which is that there has to be a reason to pay attention. Just the sheer fact that you want them to learn this structure is not enough to drive interest. The story has to lead the way in everything we do.
That kind of reminds me, in some language teaching circles, we talk about communicative purpose. So like, what is the reason that we're using the language to communicate right now? So using the language, like if you're familiar with like special person interview, like we're not using that to practice language. We're using language as a vehicle to learn about our classmates.
Yeah.
Another communicative purpose is to learn about the world around us. And we do that through reading stories, listening to stories as well. And then finally, which I'm not the expert to talk about this. If you want to learn more about this one, you should check out Dr. Diane Neubauer and Dr. Reed Riggs' podcast, Conversations About Language Teaching, where they talk about language play, which kind of goes into this communicative purpose of language for entertainment or language for enjoyment, for personal fulfillment. So, like, what I'm hearing you talk about with, like, starting with the story and starting with something that is compelling, like, I think you're hitting on that language use for enjoyment, like, really hard. Like, we're not giving the students the lyrics to a song with an infinitive in parentheses and what form should it be. It's just like things like who said this, who said you arrived late, because that's about understanding the story, not necessarily about forming the correct language and stuff like that. So we can take it and we can take these stories and use all of the strategies that we have as teachers, as language teachers, to keep language comprehensible, and as people to connect, to talk about these stories in more, I don't want to say real world, because that just sounds kind of weird to me, but like in...
I mean, it can be. I mean, that's the notion we have to dispel, is that the words that are coming out of their mouth right now is somehow fake classroom language. And that's just what it's this constant battle that we're in. I've even heard teachers say things along the lines of, like, you know, like kind of diminishing language that came out. It's like, oh, well, that's kind of like textbooky language. It's not like how people really say it out in the real world. And I just think that, man, we just have to do everything we can and to dispel the notion that the what is emanating from our students as imperfect or whatever that may be, that it's not the real deal, that it's as long as it's communicating genuine language between another person, that, mm-hmm. that again, that they're not in rehearsal, that they're genuinely
doing the thing right now.
Hi, listeners. This is Ben. I'm in the middle of editing right now, and I've discovered that my audio for the last part of this excellent interview with Jim just got lost somehow. So I'm going to attempt to reinsert my questions in a way that isn't awkward. So please bear with me. I believe my question to Jim at this juncture would have been, Jim, how can we support the study of other cultures, so cultures different from our own, through the materials we create, especially given that we're always going to be coming at that from our own positionality, which might be outside the target culture? Meaning, I'm a teacher of German, I'm not from Germany. Bill teaches Spanish, and he's not from a Spanish-speaking country. The United States not being a Spanish-speaking country notwithstanding. So how can we support our students in the studies of cultures other than their own?
It's such a good question. And I'll be honest, if you ask the average person what's the biggest criticism of Woolly, it's going to be like, well, it kind of represents this U.S. culture. It's created by somebody who's not a native speaker of the language. It doesn't really push very far out into the broader world and push outside the back. And so, you know, we've definitely, man, we have had, I've done a lot of deep thinking on this topic, and it really gets to the place of like, well, what's my role as a storyteller and in this particular context? And I think I'm going to speak now as Senior Woolley, not as your average classroom teacher. As Senior Woolley, I think I'm in sort of maybe a bit of a privileged position. And then I think as a language teacher, I think as in a classroom, it is my job 100% to make sure that I am bringing so many different types of stories into the classroom and centering people of all different voices and backgrounds and all across the world. And I've thought a lot about what my place is as this storyteller. I've thought a lot about like what does it mean to be a storyteller of a language that I was not born speaking? What does it mean to be a storyteller? What is that line between me telling stories and me appropriating language? Because there's just no getting around the fact that I am making a product that is being bought by language, by teachers. So where is my place in all of this? How do I do? And I think for me, the core principle of what we do as Woolies, we are not a curriculum. I don't pretend for a second to be a curriculum. And I see teachers once in a while. In fact, I think I just saw somebody on Facebook just saying yesterday, hey, does anyone else use Wooly as an entire curriculum? I think it could work really well. And I don't want that. I mean, sure, would we make a lot more money? Sure. And if that was my driving principle of just making a lot more money, I probably would have made a curriculum years ago. I don't want to do that because I don't want to be the sole voice of Spanish. I would never want that. So what kinds of stories do I tell? Well, how do I tell stories without culturally appropriating? I think it starts from telling my stories. That's first and foremost. I don't want to spend 3 months researching some, you know, cultural event in Peru and then taking that and then finding a way to tell that story. There are so many authors out there that would do a far better job at that than me. There are people who would say, well, you know, yeah, but you've got to bring that into the classroom. There are lots of teachers who would say, well, I want those stories. I want that story in my classroom. And I say, yes, you don't just want it, you need to have it in the classroom. The problem is that I'm not your storyteller for that. What I am is a storyteller of somebody who started taking Spanish in seventh grade and who wasn't very good at it and didn't particularly like it, but fell in love with the language as I started to use it as a vehicle for storytelling and genuinely fell in love with it. And frankly, I'm still not even that great at it. I mean, I'm fluent in it, whatever that means. I'm good at it. I can have a conversation about almost anything under the sun. My accent is still somewhat imperfect. If you listen to some of my early stuff, it's really rough around the edges. And I think that is sort of culturally, that's what I bring to the table, I think. I think that there's something valuable in having students see somebody else who wasn't born speaking Spanish, and here they are still sharing it with the world, wearing all their imperfections on their sleeve. Because I think that's sort of the missing piece, I think sometimes. I think we sometimes make too big of a deal about language and culture being way over there. This thing that's happening over there, far, far away from you, and maybe one day you'll be fortunate enough to get to participate in it. And the thing is of course students need to be being exposed to that. But I think sometimes I have a ton of like teachers who subscribe to Wooly who live in very rural areas who've basically never even left their town, who don't know many people who are speaking that language in their classroom, and who don't see any prospects for themselves by which they're necessarily going to ever be even leaving that town or state anytime in the near future. And for them to start thinking that language is that thing, those people so far away across the ocean or what have that, they also need to be able to see that language can be them. You know what I mean? That language can be spoken and understood by them and their peers. And so that's where I think our piece of it comes in. It's not that we believe that you shouldn't, that Spanish could just be Señor Wooly stories. I don't think that for a second. But I do think that it has a place because students need to be able to see themselves embracing the language within their own context, within their own culture, within the classroom itself.
This reminded me of old 90s cereal commercials where they would say that the cereal was part of a balanced breakfast. And really the balanced breakfast was like so many other things like pancakes and sausage and orange juice and stuff that was not just the box cereal. But we thought that the cereal was the whole meal. And then sometimes we make the cereal the whole meal. And that isn't really balanced nutrition. We want the same thing from our students, which is that they have this balance of seeing themselves in the language and then seeing something that is different from them to build empathy, to build understanding, to build knowledge about the world.
But I mean, it can go the other way. I mean, if you're in a classroom and you're using like Wooly or anything like that, and the only stories that your students seem to respond to or in any way be enthusiastic in any capacity are the stories that maybe are made by someone like me, Señor Wooly, or stories that are self-generated within the classroom. And then anytime you attempt to push out to, you know, and bring other voices into the classroom and then starts to fall flat, then that should be a cause to really focus on there and figure out how to make it work rather than say, well, then let's just stop that and just keep doing what's working, which is these goofy little Señor Wooly stories. It can be, as you say, part of a balanced breakfast. But if at any point it starts to veer towards being the only thing, then we have a problem.
Like we're, as language learners, like we're in a community of language learners, and you can still communicate within that world, within the context of being a group of language learners. Like who hasn't at some point been to like one of their either high school or university sponsored conversas or like some sort of coffee and conversation thing where you just go and you just talk.
Yeah.
And like that is also like legitimate communication of ideas, and you're sharing Absolutely. And learning from each other. And yeah, I think that's great. You've got two points on here that really resonate with me. So you already talked about how the story comes first.
Yes.
And writing with relevant language.
Yeah.
But the thing that I've struggled with, so I've been, this is my fifth year teaching Spanish 4, and I'm getting better at it every year. But your Wooly Principle 3 is like older kids need simple Spanish 2.
Yeah.
Which I think is definitely important, and not just that they need simple language as well. Especially because, you know, cognitive load, like if you're thinking about all of the different parts of language, but you're trying to introduce something, and this is looking at things as like, you know, as a vessel for language teaching, mind you. So, but like if I'm introducing a complex structure to students, they're going to be much more likely to understand it and later produce that language if it's wrapped up in, one, if it's wrapped up in a story, because stories just make things memorable, but also the language surrounding a complex structure or something is easy to understand, then we're much more likely to process the language and actually start, like, kickstart the acquisition of those kinds of structures. So that's something that resonates with me a lot. And then,
yeah, I mean, I think that you, I mean, you guys are acquisition teachers. I'm, you know, preaching to the choir here a little bit, but yeah, there is this temptation, I think, to just sort of like constantly move on to the next rigorous thing and constantly push ourselves towards the next highest level of language. I mean, yeah, it's typically more traditional textbook teachers who fall into that, but we all fall into that. This belief that, I see it right now. I mean, we released a new video called, well, I can't tell the name because it's a secret video, but it's incredibly simplistic language. Very,
and it's
very
great.
I cackled. Thank you. I love it. But let's just say, this is a case where once we had the story, we stepped back and said, okay, well, what's the simple language? And this was actually a little bit of a gag, this video, because once we had the concept, we said, all right, let's pull back and what's the Spanish? And then I realized, oh my gosh, I can totally make a gag that this is a textbook thematic unit song that then turns into something else. But the point being that I've seen quite a few comments from teachers and going, oh, this was just a little too easy for my students. They know this stuff already. And I think that's where the value of a story is just even more powerful, right? You've moved on to this other thing, but then this unbelievably simple language gets represented inside a compelling story. All right. So what's one of the single most common mistakes in Spanish is how to say my name is in Spanish. And in Spanish, you can say me llamo, which means I call myself. But most students think it means my name is. So they make the mistake of saying me llamo es, which would mean I call myself is. Well, that's wrong. You just say me llamo Jim. Students make this mistake all the way up through Spanish AP. It's like ridiculous how much they, even high level students, are doing this. Now, if you were to stop and say, guys, you can't say me llamo es, and then write it on the board and have a little lesson about it and teach them, students are going to be, you know, groaning and rolling their eyes. They know this. They remember this. The last time you said this, we've got this. But if they just simply watch a story or take and read a story where that simple language is really repeated and shown in a very highly contextualized and high interest manner, that's where they will learn it. And that's where the value of that comes from. I just think that we just fall into this trap of believing, we've got to constantly up the rigor, and the stories that they have to read or view have to constantly be matching our students' level. But if we're just occasionally willing to just, as long as we're telling that, sharing a story that does not have the explicit purpose of teaching a concept, but has instead the explicit purpose of just telling a fantastic story, if it happens to be told in simple language, they will barely even notice that it's simplistic, and they'll be being fed that incredibly healthy dose of simple language that they still so desperately need. I think we just, so that's what, another reason why we still do that.
I would really love any tips or tricks about, and I mean, you kind of answered it here, but like, if there's any specific things that you think about when you're making the language rip and not boring, when you're getting a lot of repetitions of language, like, I think this could be something that would be helpful to teachers when they are maybe writing a story for their class, maybe when they're editing. Maybe they're modifying an authentic resource and they want to try to make sure that some things come up more often. Or maybe they're doing like story asking or story listening or something like that. Do you have any quick tips for how we can think about? Yeah,
Bill, I mean, that is an inherently challenging question. I don't mind give me my best shot at it. But I mean, it's inherently challenging because so much of that is gut and feel. I think that,
yeah,
I think at the core of it, I think at the core of it comes the same thing that I've said a few times here, but I think it's important to repeat it within this particular context. If you are repeating the word to teach the word, you are not serving the story. If you are repeating the structure because you feel your students need their 14th rep of that structure, you are not serving the story. If you can tell a story where the repetition serves the story, then that is a beautiful thing. And that is not an easy thing to do. I don't mean to go back to, I know I sound like I'm shamelessly self-promoting here, but this is why we tell stories at Wooly that are fundamentally circular, and it's why we like telling stories with music. Music, at least if you're typical, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, most stories follow a little bit of a circular flow. And in that story, Tarde, about the kid who arrives late, that is your perfect opportunity where the repetition serves the story. The kid walks into the classroom. The teacher says, "Why did you arrive late?" The kid says, "I didn't arrive late. I arrived early." Teacher confirms, "You arrived late." Then it happens a second time with a change in the circumstances. Then it happens a third time. I think that that's the key. The key is finding repetition that serves the story. But if instead we find ourselves going, I know my kids aren't quite getting the... I mean, how many times? They need hundreds of reps of that structure. They'll get the reps of that structure in other stories. We don't need to perfect it now. Mm-hmm. And don't kill your story by spite, by feeding them more reps. Eventually, and it won't take very long, eventually they will get tired of the language because the language is fundamentally boring. I mean, that's what repetition is boring. It's boring. Repetition is fundamentally boring. Just say it's, I'm repeating myself. It sounds terrible. You need to make sure you're interesting. I wish I could give you like a surefire method of making sure you're never going to be boring. But if you find yourself serving that repetition instead of the story, you're going to be boring. It may not happen today, because right now, today, they might be super interested in learning the language. But within a couple months, they will be.
And that reminds me, I want to say this came from Dr. Michelle Kent about like this idea of, rather than thinking of things as repetition, of thinking about providing students with robust exposure to language. So getting that form of llegaste, like you arrived, like getting that in multiple different scenarios, right? It's not just, okay, I want students to hear llegaste a bunch of times, so llegaste, you know, like it is in a context, and it's in a context that is new, that serves the purpose of telling the story. So like that's where it's not just repetition. It is like just you're giving students more exposure, and because you use different forms of verbs and language within the songs, like that even broadens the robustness of the language as well, because not only are students getting the "you arrived" form, they're also getting "I arrived." So they're getting the meaning of those two words, the distinct meaning of those two words, but there's also like this connection happening in their brain that like these words are related, because you're getting it in a bunch of different contexts. Well, thank you for giving some insight into your mind, I guess, your process. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I forgot what word I used earlier, and I almost said demented.
Probably not my work. I prefer work as well. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll take it.
Diabolical better. Okay. We usually wrap up our episodes with some girl bossing. Feel free to not answer this question.
Sure.
But is there a particular Send Your Wooly project that you feel you girl bossed? That you really just like went all in and that you're super proud of? You know, I realize that all of your stories are probably your babies, but do you have a favorite?
Oh, goodness.
And it doesn't even have to be a favorite because of the production or because of the song.
I mean, yeah, at this point, we've made so many stories over the years. It's certainly impossible to pick a favorite. The video Tarde, which just came out, is I think one of the most stellar achievements, I think, that we've put out in years. I think it's kind of a near perfect example of kind of how to combine simplistic language with story. For me, if I had a personal favorite story, I mean, there's one in particular, and you know, we tend to prefer the things that don't always get the attention that everything else gets, right? But there's one story that I've written that I hold up as like a crowning achievement for me personally. And it's a graphic novel that I wrote called Me Llamo Victor. I think I hold it up as easily one of the best things I've ever written. And it's a prequel to this old video I made years ago called Guapo, which is a satirical story about this guy who thinks he's hot stuff, incredibly good looking. And it's a fun little video, but it's also a video that I feel like was intended to be a satire. And it is a satire, but that doesn't change the fact that, I mean, I think a lot about satire, and I think sometimes that which the author intends to be satirical is not always the thing that is perceived by the audience. I mean, we can't affect how audiences perceive everything that we create. As an author, that is a privilege we are not given. We put things out in the world and people perceive them, and that doesn't say we don't have responsibility. We do have responsibility, but we don't have control. And that's the important distinction. And so that is a video that I think very, very highly of, despite the fact that there are hundreds and hundreds of videos out there on YouTube of kids just going, I'm Victor, kids like embracing like just like the most surface levels of it, not the satire. So I wrote a graphic novel that really kind of takes that apart and brings it down to the building blocks, and I'm really pleased with how it came together.
It's lovely as well. And I'm kind of upset with myself that I didn't even bring up the graphic novels already, because I think like graphic novels are something that are available in multiple languages. But I think your graphic novels, and specifically on a technical, like your e-reader on your website, is top notch.
Thank you so much.
And it's just great. But yeah, and I think I've always respected the Woolly Company because like you said, like you do take responsibility. There have been times where you've addressed concerns, and I think you do it with great. So,
I think it's just, I mean, I know it's a bit of a cliche to say, but I don't know if it's a cliche, but I just think you just can't ever stop listening. You can't make anything perfect, and nor can you make something where it's impossible to not rub someone the wrong way. And the fact that that a piece of content does rub somebody wrong the wrong way doesn't mean that you as an author has done something necessarily wrong. So there's a temptation, I think, to be like, well, I know I'm not in the wrong, so I could just shut my ears and things like that. But I think you can never stop listening. I think the moment you do, I think then, but. So that's what we try. Yeah. We just try to keep our ears open.
Something that I've been like trying to get across with my students recently is like mistakes are perfectly fine.
Yep.
The worst thing that happens when you make a mistake is that you learn something.
This has been delightful. You guys are great, and thank you for this.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing this podcast, and you guys have been doing fantastic work, and I'm so glad that you do this. So this is what, episode 28, 29? Where are you at?
27.
Kudos to you guys. That's fantastic. Wow. Fantastic.
Who'd a thunk? All right. Well, again, Jim, Senor Woolly, thank you very much.
Thank you both.
This has been a pleasure. And I wish you all the luck as Woolly Week or Woolly Month starts wrapping up. And
we'll find a way to end it sooner or later.
All right.
Yep, you got it. All right. Have a good night, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of SLA, second language acquisition for everyone. Reminder to check out our socials to get involved into the book club or the book discussion that we're doing on proficiency-based instruction, teaching grammar for proficiency. And until next time, go out and slay. Bye.
Hi, everyone. Thank you.